Welcome to Brands Talking Influencers Q&A. We're taking our fireside chat to the Grin Gets Real podcast. Now you can listen and learn beyond the webinar experience. At the end of our fireside chat, we usually have a nice little live Q&A, but we've got so many great questions and not enough time. This is the podcast where we answer those unanswered questions. A little bit about the fireside chat. We interviewed Tyler and Ashley from Tres Colores. Now, Tres Colores is a D2C jewelry brand that's based in New York. They create personalized nameplates and jewelry. They use data from creator content to be strategic with their paid ads and their entire marketing strategy, focused on looking at what they do across all social platforms together, not as silos, to execute a paid strategy that continues to increase their revenue and brand awareness. They shared insights on how they get content rights, how they leverage UGC, and the importance of working together as a marketing team to truly execute an omni-channel strategy. We had so many more questions. I can't wait to dive into it. So put your AirPods in, turn up that volume, and get ready for those unanswered questions with Tyler and Ashley from Tres Colores. Tyler, Ashley, welcome back. This time you're on the Grin Gets Real podcast. This is an extension of our Brands Talking Influencers Q&A, all of our unanswered questions, and you, my friends, got a lot of them. Are you ready to dive in?
I'm ready.
Let's get it.
I've been ready.
Now, how often would you say that you're going back to the same influencers to post versus finding new influencers?
Oh, that's a great question. I love this question. I think they're... I have the answer in my head, but I'm trying to verbalize it in the correct way. So, I would say that I have a pocket of influencers that I always go to for content. They've been like my day ones since, you know, I came apart, as I onboard into Tres Colores. I've kept them in my pocket, developed great relationships with them. They are more than happy to create content, like, without even trying. I have all the rights to their photos, regardless if, you know, it's a Tres Colores post. And I would say that it's a very nice amount of influencers that I use that I kind of recycle through. But for new influencers, I would say it's unlimited. There's no cap on new influencers, and I think that's something that's really important. I know that we have a KPI for prospecting a week, but I tell Tyler and our other colleague, this is the minimum. I want you to meet this. Our KPI goal is your minimum. There's millions, maybe even a billion influencers. Let's capture as many as we can. It's like Pokemon. Catch them when you can.
Yeah. I love it. Do you have an ambassador program where you have people posting on a regular basis? If so, how is that working for you in Grin?
We do. It's specific to how detailed do I want to go into this? Our ambassadors are specifically kids. And the reason why they're kids is because we spontaneously came up with the idea of launching a kids collection, which instantly hit. It took off the moment it launched, and it's been successful ever since. We started this ambassador program specifically because we didn't want our competitors to use the kids that we outreached. And so these kids, and we have a very nice amount of them, post content with Tres Colores. We have different agreements with them, whether it's weekly, monthly, whatever is agreed on. But that's pretty much our ambassador program. In terms of other influencers as a whole, it's kind of, where's Tres Colores?
And as Ash said, the most important part with these kids that are brand ambassadors is the exclusivity part of it. So we really do, all of these kids that are posting amazing, proven, tried content backed by ads and performance have exclusivity contracts with Tres Colores. So nobody else can go nab them in the jewelry vertical.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's because, like, again, like, we were like, let's experiment with this. Like, let's see how kids go. Like, kids wear jewelry too. And then we didn't realize it would become 20% of our business.
Literally.
Now, when you talk about kids, really?
20 to
25. When you talk about kids, what, 20 to 25? Okay. Excellent. I love that you call those kids. I was envisioning like smaller, younger children.
20% of our revenue comes from kids since.
Oh, I know. I'm all.
Yeah.
Okay, well then what's the kid age span that you guys are targeting?
I classify kids under 10. But not okay. But not like out of the womb.
Under 10 but not out of the womb, very specific.
No, that's very important. I would say between 2 and 10 to be more like,
okay,
to give an actual specific age. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. I love it. Okay, so this next question, Tyler, you kind of already answered in during the fireside chat, but I would love to double click a little bit because it has to do with whitelisting. And you were so passionate about it when you answered. So this one says, do you use retargeting and new demo targeting in influencer dark posting whitelisting?
I would lean more towards dark posting than whitelisting just because of the expiration dates on platforms like TikTok. It isn't to say that like it's not an integral part of your strategy. And to be honest, I could test a lot more with it. It's just when we did test with it on TikTok and the expiration of something that hit, no longer being able to put paid dollars behind, I was like, kind of in a sense jaded. I was like a kind of upset at the fact that I'm like, man, this was like doing great and it expired after 14 days. Like, I don't want to be in this situation again.
That makes sense. I did have a follow-up question because the initial question is, do you use retargeting and new demo targeting in influencer direct posting and whitelisting? During the fireside chat, you were passionate against whitelisting because of the expiration. But in your answer, you said, I'd lean more towards dark posting. If you can, for the audience, describe what's the difference between dark posting and whitelisting?
Yeah, so dark posting would be like having that influencer or that person post on behalf versus whitelisting is like more of that in collaboration with. The biggest difference is per platform. So like full transparency, full honesty, it all serves a purpose and it's all something that should be tested on different platforms. The reason I'm so anti-whitelist is because of that expiration date. Like in terms of a business, like I'm a performance marketer. I'm not just like a brand manager. So at heart, I'm always thinking growth and scale. I'm always thinking longevity. So the fact that if something can take off, do really well, and kill it for a week, I would say I would rather have something that could kill it for months and months and months. Call me old school or traditional or whatever it may be. But that's kind of my stance on it. But I do think that it's something we could test more, and I would encourage other people to test it.
Nice. All right. This next question, it's a long one. Here we go. Hi, I'm a luxury dessert company. I recently hired an influencer to promote my product. She's a foodie influencer and has a lot of engagement. Her post on my brand received a lot of engagement, but I noticed it's from other food influencers. My question is, should I be open to working with luxury influencers for clothing, food, and fashion?
I say yeah.
Right?
I say, why not? Like, you have nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. Maybe you never know. Maybe you'll have more success with someone within who travels or maybe who's within fashion. Everyone loves food.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like food is kind of like what brings people together. So your audience is really unlimited. So why not, rather than sticking to food influencers, like branch out, go to other influencers, fashion, travel, just moms with kids, just expand on that. That's like my instant thought.
Some of our best influencers that Ash has got us involved in are affiliated with sneakers and nail art, right? Like not necessarily jewelry or lifestyle or actresses or like sneaker fashion and nail art hits with us so hard.
Yeah.
Well, it's also why you should always be testing with different types of influencers, because you never know.
Yeah. 100%. It's so funny. This is so off topic. In my other life, before I was with Trust Glory and I was kind of in college, I ran a food blog, like a food Instagram, and food, a lot of, and I don't know if it's the same, but a lot of food influencers have this group where they talk to each other within like a WhatsApp or like a Telegram, and they all support each other. So if one food influencer posts, all 50 of them are commenting, which is probably why she saw that, because they are all supporting each other. So that way the brand awareness and the reach for all of them kind of shoot up together.
Yeah, I think, see, now I'm going to get super off topic, but that reminds me of influencer pods. I think there are a lot of people that don't want to engage with influencers who are part of influencer pods, but I think there's influencer pods and then there's influencer friends, right? Yeah. Like if you're a creator, you have creator friends. That's the world that you live in. They're your coworkers essentially, right? So I think there are a lot of brands that are hesitant about that. Like it's the scary of like, okay, is it truly engaged? I mean, and I can see it because they're wondering, is it truly engagement from the community that I want, or is it just coworkers supporting one another? Either way, it's brand awareness.
Yep.
Yeah, especially like if they grow, you grow.
Yeah, so that's true. Do you find you get more from micro influencers?
Ooh,
I have an answer. I would say 1,000%.
I would say I enjoy working with micro influencers a lot more, because they're excited, they're on board, you know, they're kind of at the starting line of their brand, and they are so specific on how the deliverable should be. So they are the ones, like we spoke about this last time, do they just post it or do they DM you? Like they are the ones that DM and they're like, hey, like give us feedback. And I love that. They take so much more time to create content versus those who are kind of macro and established and they wear it and that's it. They like put in the time, they like have a calendar. They're like, okay, I'm creating Trust Glory content. I need to make sure it's perfect. They ask a lot of great questions. Like I love working with micro, and you never know, micro turns into macro. So
yeah,
for sure.
Well, and that happens more often.
I would say because these micro influencers are untainted and they don't have biased opinions that happen at that mid-tier up and going into macro, it's not just a business transaction. Like Ash is saying, they're part of their brand. It's something that they're super motivated to do because they want to be an influencer. So they're trying to do good. Now, if they provide us with awesome content and they hit and I can put ad dollars that blow them up and they blow us up, now you have a relationship that's super healthy where both parties are really profitable. And that's how we've been able to get some kids like from a couple, you know, tens of thousands to followers to closer to 1 million followers where everybody wants to work with them. And they're so appreciative to us because we were the people there giving them a chance when everybody else was overlooking them.
Yeah.
Versus working with some mid-tier moderate person that's asking absolute bullshit for their rates. It is the wild freaking west out there in influencer world. So if you get to that 30 to 100K mark, people are going to try to take you for a ride. So I would actually recommend starting micro and nano first, building some solid relationships, and then try to invest into bigger influencers to see how it works. But have your roots be built with people that are trying to do the same thing your brand is doing.
Yeah.
I love it.
Also, micro, they're looking to develop relationships with brands.
Yeah.
Like this is like what they want. They're like, okay, I'm going to work really hard to create this relationship with this brand. So they are so on board to whatever task they're given. They're going to do 110% because they want to make sure that they're delivering and everything is great. So then that way the brand works with them again. They just care so much more.
That makes sense. All right. How does Grin help you keep track of and foster or manage those crucial relationships? I love the laugh.
Because Tyler knows my answer already. He knows. He knows that it's just in my head. Like this has nothing to do with Grin, and like I'm not saying that Grin doesn't do this. It's just like because I went from Excel sheets to Grin, my Excel sheets, I think really just like helped me just like naturally create relationships that like I do without even noticing now.
Yeah.
You know, I check in on influencers all the time. I haven't worked with a few for a while, but I'm just like, oh my God, you're pregnant. I'm so happy for you. Or we're so happy for you. Cause as a team, we actually are very happy for you. You know, it's just, it's kind of something that when our influencer marketing started, it was something that was very crucial for us and it happened very naturally. It wasn't okay. Our KPI is to create relationships. It was like, no, it just happened naturally. And we started off all micro and all these micro influencers became macro and, yeah. You know, the relationship stayed and it was just very organic and genuine. And so now influencer relationships are just very like that. It just happens.
Well, I think the relationship part, it's not like Grin can't take care of your relationship.
Yeah.
Like that's not even, it's like, it's, that's not what it's there for. It's to give you the time to do that.
Yep.
And in all fairness, you guys also haven't been on Grin for like years. You've just got on
like
Grin, which I think this is also why I wanted you guys on here, because it's amazing that you've been able to see so much success. For anyone who's listening who doesn't have an Ashley, we have a tagging system. Yep. That would take care of like that red light, green light, yellow light. I think I said that in the wrong order, but you get what I'm saying.
I get it.
Like we have a tagging system to allow you to do that if you don't already have it built into your head, but you've also been doing it for so long in such a certain way. I think that kind of stuff is just harder to shift. And your relationship building is, that's you. Yep. That's you. That's Tyler. That's you guys reaching out to influencers and legitimately talking to them. Like Grin does nothing for you in regards to like, hey, this is how you should.
It doesn't send a notification like, hey, send this person a hello. Like it's just.
Yeah. It doesn't say it like, hey, hand write. Like that's totally a choice that you've made. So to increase like, or to make that
just more special.
More special. I wanted to use the word delight. You know how we're always talking about like creating customer delight? You're creating influencer delight with those little things, but that's part of like that's part of what you're doing. That's not, you know, and I know that I should push like Grin and all of these things, but that's a you thing.
100%.
Yeah. It's every brand has their own way of doing it. And this is just the Trust Chloe way. And it kind of stems from our CEO. Our CEO doesn't need to do customer service. Yeah, he still does customer service because he cares. Like, it's just, it stems down.
Yeah.
Customer service, just as a brand, is one of the most important parts of a brand because it represents, like, who you are. And he, to this day, will still jump on CS and answer emails. And, you know, he's happy to do it.
That's great. Okay. What are your thoughts on the new paid partnership label on Instagram? Do you think that reduces the effectiveness of the post since everyone knows it's a paid promo? This is a good table debate.
This is a conversation.
This is a good one, right? Like, do you think that it matters? Do you think that it doesn't?
I think it depends on who the paid partnership is with. Is it a paid partnership with Gymshark? Everyone knows that they do so many partnerships with so many influencers. It's not a surprise that they're doing a paid partnership with Gymshark or a larger scale brand. And in that case, I would say it's fine. You know, they're getting the engagement, the brand awareness, regardless if it has or if it doesn't have that specific title. I would say though, for smaller brands, which I would classify us as a smaller brand, I wouldn't want influencers to put that again, because I want it to be as genuine and as organic as possible. That once you stamp that paid partnership on it, it kind of is just, oh, like let's I think it really just depends on the brand and if they want that and the scale of the brand. It's just kind of like Majuri a few years ago was very into influencer marketing, and you saw so many influencers macro micro kind of promoting Majuri, and they if they had that stamp on it 2 years ago, all of them would have Majuri on it. But for us, it's something that we would choose not to opt in on.
That makes sense. Do your influencers have discount codes, or do you feel like it takes away from your authenticity? And I think that you had mentioned this during the fireside chat, but just a great re-ask.
Yeah. I mean, there's always a sale on our website regardless. We're always running some sort of discount, whether it's 35, 45, and occasionally the 50 or very, very rarely 60. So influencers will most likely have a more or same discount as our website.
Okay. Which that makes sense. That makes sense. And I think it's important that anyone who's giving a discount, like it's either got to be the same or it definitely has to be incentivized as to,
for sure,
to really make someone like, yeah, actually leverage the discount code.
Yeah. Wait, I would go back and forth on this though.
I would say for somebody that doesn't have a way to track or is struggling to track and attribute influencer marketing, discount codes is like, kind of a slot. It's sloppy. Like, it's not the cleanest way to do it because not everybody's going to be using a code, but it's something. So if you're unfamiliar with UTMs, or if you want just like a baseline coverage to kind of get a feeler out there for purchases from influencers, a unique discount code for that influencer is like a great first step.
Yeah. We go back and forth on this as a team though. We're like, if we're running 50% off and we're giving an influencer 50% off, like how are we supposed to track that? And half of the party is saying, well, if a follower is very committed to an influencer, they're 1,000% putting their code in versus someone who just stumbled across it and they're just going to take the website code. But, you know, very rarely is it kind of equal. It'll always, the influencer code will most likely always be more unless it's during like a holiday season.
Yeah, that makes sense. How do you get the initial relationships of trust started? Do you email, DM with the focus of quote unquote, we love your content and we can give you a gift for your, or we can gift you free product, or is the focus more on what's your price for promotion? That's very harsh. How would you advise to get those relationships started from zero?
I like keeping things short and sweet. I kind of go to like, let's collab with like a super cute emoji and showing excitement. Something that is kind of like a pet peeve of mine, and I don't mean it to be a pet peeve of mine, but when influencers DM us, when they send me like two paragraphs, I'm not reading it.
It's a lot of words.
It's a lot. Like, I'd rather you just say, hey, let's collab, and I will instantly open it and review it and communicate with you. But once you send me two paragraphs, it's hefty. It's a lot, especially when you have like an entire DM that you need to go through. I send them something that's very short and sweet. Let's collab with a cute emoji, exclamation point, and I will just fill in as many DMs as I can until Instagram blocks me.
She does. That's
I love
facts,
that until Instagram
though.
Blocks
that's
you.
Facts, though. She reaches her messaging limit every day.
Yeah.
Really?
Really.
That's insane.
Really?
No, yeah.
Like, facts.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know how comfortable you are answering this, so we can definitely cut this out if for any reason. But in a month, how much do you spend for influencers and what is your ROI? Can you give general numbers?
To be honest, we barely spend money on influencers.
Do you just equate it to, you have to pay for content, right?
Majority of it is gifting.
Like influencer content? Yeah, majority is gifting. Like we rarely pay influencers.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that's why I said 90% is purely gifting.
Oh, that's interesting. And even if you leverage the content for paid ads, you're not paying that influencer for it?
No.
You're just getting the content rights?
Correct.
That's ridiculous. That's so crazy. I think in my head, I thought that you guys paid for the ones that you repurpose for paid ads.
No. So
no.
I guess like for our ambassador program, I won't say the amount that is because that is a monthly cost, and that's a monthly fixed cost, which I won't state. But in terms of, but that's specifically like for kids.
Yeah.
So that's set aside. If we're going to bucket just Trust Chloe as a whole brand, we don't pay for content rights. We rarely pay for influencers. It's 98% gifting. And like I said, in the fireside chat, like I'll DM them, be like, hey, do you mind if we use this photo. And it can also be customers. Hey, like, thank you for tagging us. Do you mind if we use this photo? Customers are thrilled. Please send me 10
Feature
more
my
photos.
Kid. Yeah.
Pick which one you want. Feature my kid.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
And so, I mean, that's a good question. Like, to expand on that question, the cost to the ROI, like, without getting into our margins, which is what you would need to truly answer, it's literally the cost to produce. Yeah. It's the cost to produce our stuff, which we... I will say this is that we are in charge of, we own our manufacturing facilities. This isn't like drop shipped or contract stuff. We have a lot of oversight over our jewelry that's getting made. So that's how we can say it's quality pieces, because we're the ones making it. And that happens to save us a lot of money, which frees us up to gift this stuff profitably. So on the ads front, when I'm spending dollars, I don't have to have a crazy 5X return to start making profit. I maybe need to keep it a little closer to a 1.2, right? 1.2, I'm making money. That's very reasonable in expectations, but it starts because we own the manufacturing.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. And I think a lot of people do miss what you're saying when it comes to ROI is like, that's a very individual like brand perspective. I don't know how much you're spending.
What are your margins? How much your product what are your margins, baby? How much money are you making per sale?
Exactly. Well, I think that there are a lot of brands that want to know like, what's the baseline? What should I expect? But it's really hard to even say what you can expect. Yeah. I don't know.
Everyone has a different goal.
Right.
Exactly. I don't know how much you're investing into marketing general.
1.2 might be enough for us to keep the lights on. 1.2 is probably more than likely enough to break your business. I would say most companies, 1.2 is going to take the light. Like, you're not going to be able to pay your bills.
Yeah. Yeah. And that plays into it. Yeah, that definitely plays into it. All right. How many follow-up emails or DMs do you typically send? Do you also need to comment on their content to get answers? And what other methods do you use to get the answers? Lots of questions.
That's
in
a
one.
Lot of question in a question.
Yeah. So I think, it's all bolted into one. So how many, I think, what's your follow-up look like? Do you have to follow up pretty frequently in order to get a reply back from, let's say, a new influencer? Because I would imagine you don't need a ton of follow-up with someone that you're already working with.
Yeah. So using Grin now has made it actually a lot easier because there's not a lot of back and forth like there used to be. Mm-hmm. Now we kind of do an intro. I send them their live URL link where they're able to go in to select their pieces, which cuts out a lot of the communication that I used to have to do.
Yeah.
And within the live URL, they select their pieces. It has the different text fields where they can enter the personalization, shipping, content rights, submit. I just ask them to ping me once it's submitted, just so I can make sure that I see it. Besides, once it's submitted, I just say, hey, like, please know our pieces are personalized. They take 2 weeks to be produced.
Yeah.
As soon as I have pieces in my hand and my team's like ready to ship out, every single order that was shipped out, I specifically DM all of them and I say, hey, just letting you know, we just shipped out your pieces. They're going to arrive X day.
Okay,
and then they get like super excited and then we're just having a conversation.
I think the second question in this multiple questions question was really interesting. I'm curious to know, do you comment on an influencer's posts?
Always.
Nice.
Yeah. Not because it's like we should, it's like because we want to. Also like they're showing us support, like we can show support back.
Yeah.
For sure.
I like that. Okay. As influencer, this is a hefty one. As influencer marketing gets widespread and the education is more known about the benefits as an influencer and a brand, how do you remain successful with gifting when most influencers expect to be paid as micro and macro? Also, with free content, how do you create terms and conditions that cover usage and amplification?
That's a very long question. Okay.
It is. Do you want me to reread it? I feel like I always
have
to read it.
Let's read it for a part.
Yeah, let's read it. Here we go. As influencer marketing gets widespread and education is more known about the benefits as an influencer and a brand, How do you remain successful with gifting when most influencers expect to be paid as micro and macro influencers? Okay. So I feel like this is very much so touching on like, all right, if everyone's getting more educated on that they can ask for payment, how are you guys still remaining successful with product gifting?
Well, I think you also just need to, I think there's different ways influencers approach brands. One, if you're emailing an influencer, I feel like, and this is just like my personal experience, an email states paid. It's more professional. It's more, you know, mm-hmm. let's have an introduction. The email usually goes to the manager or the agency and then immediately is a paid. If it's going through paid, we as a team will negotiate with the manager. We'll specifically tell them these are what her metrics are or their metrics are. This, according to the metrics, this is what she's worth. We know that you're taking that extra 20% for your pocket. Mm-hmm. And then we'll deliberate based on that. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, and it's okay. And we're okay with that. We're not going to fight with every single manager because there's so many fish in the sea. Not to say that like that's what we're fishing, but we have to be realistic as a brand that we have a budget and we're not going to go and bend over backwards for specific influencers when, you know, a lot of other influencers within the same realm are like, hey, like, I love your pieces. Like, let's do it.
Now, and that's the key right there is keeping,
because
it's like you're talking about real shit right now. And it's something that I think a lot of brands as influencers get into the space and they get educated, it's going to force them to be more realistic with themselves. Like, I don't want to bend over backwards for an influencer that doesn't want to work with me. An influencer that wants to work with us would be willing to accept free gifts, would be willing to do these things. Yeah. So by us, Ash specifically, keeping an abundant mindset when it comes to the influencers out there and not some scarcity bullshit that I'm going to have to pay you $3,000 to make this work, honestly, gets us in a position to be hitting these free content providers all the time. So it's about you as a – it's your perspective as the person managing these relationships with influencers and keeping that abundant mindset, asking yourself and knowing that if somebody wants to work with you, they'll do whatever it takes to work with you. You don't have to pay them an astronomical amount of money.
Yeah.
It goes back to like me saying like I really hate working with agencies and managers because of that specific percentage that they want in their pocket. It's kind of – I'm managing the influencer, but I at the end of the day still have to pay my bill. So I need to make sure that I make my commission. They're not thinking about the influencer anymore. They're thinking about their commission. So in my head, if I'm able to go around them, I 1,000% will. And it doesn't work all the time, but it's worth a shot. And it has in the past, I have gotten luck with it. And the manager will email me back being like, hey, like, I know you're speaking. And I'm like, well, that's between me and her. Or me and them, or whatever it is. And that's the reality of it. It's, we do the calculations on, what is it, how many clicks per post, Tyler? And at the end of the day, someone who's asking 3,000 for a post, that click is only, they're only valued at $500. So why are we going to push our limit when the $3,000 doesn't even guarantee any profit or revenue?
Yeah. 100%. Well, and you guys bring up a really good point. It kind of all goes back to like that relationship part of it. Like you do need to, in order to get like the authentic content, which is the content that really resonates with, you know, your community, your consumers, the people that you want to reach, it should be a conversation, not just a negotiation.
Yeah.
Like, hey, this is where I'm at, right? This is where I'm at. We want you, but we also don't want you if you don't want us. Like,
exactly.
That's just the truth of the matter. And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's a lifestyle, by the way. That's not just an influencer way to tactic. That's a whole ass lifestyle. You should be that way with everything
it's
in your
true.
Life.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I also just want to state also just because, and this is how I also perceive, look at things. If I see a micro influencer who works their ass off to create content, and I see that they put the time in to create an amazing reels or just an amazing post, I would rather spend on them than someone like a micro to know that they're putting in the time and the commitment than someone who is just, they just want money in their money in their pocket because it's just easy. And then they're just, that's it. I'd rather spend money on micro.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it is because then they're part of your team. Ooh. And that's really what I mean. It may sound cheesy, but then they become part of your team. They are part of like the Tress Calori team. And then they carry that in their posts too. Like there's a sense of pride of like, hey, I got this. I am like the brand.
For sure.
You know, there's a huge sense of pride when it comes to it.
We get 100%. So many posts of people that we gift to. There's other posts they start posting with their kids, with themselves, whatever, just wearing Trace stuff. So they've
like
tagged us.
Like casually wearing it.
They've tagged us once or twice, but now it's a part of their day to day. Like it's showing up all over their feed because they like our product.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. There was a second part to this long question as well. with free content, how do you create terms and conditions that cover the usage and amplification?
Yeah, we spoke about this. We just simply ask them. If we're gifting, we're not expecting for people to go out, create hours of content. We simply ask, like, if we're gifting you, give us some sort of support and shout out and whatever is comfortable to you. And that's why I mentioned 90% of the time they're giving us a IG story, which actually has a nicer reach than a feed post. And we're okay with that. I'm okay with that. I want to use that and repurpose it for our story. It's totally fine. Especially if they're including a tag, a hashtag, and their code.
Nice. Okay, let's see. How do you find specific influencers to target? I know you mentioned Twitch streamers in bio. So I think out of context, not knowing that you're talking about like the Grin search, like that's, or I assume that's what you meant, right? Like that's what you're putting in the bio.
That's my
in the bio search.
My answer to that question is Grin filters. Grin's filtration system is pretty wild. And honestly, I was shocked to some of the details that you could sort and filter by, since some of the actual features aren't available on networks like Facebook or Instagram. When you're just going to target random people, you can set those audience demographics of the creator in Grin. So if you wanted a specific, I mean, down to ethnicity, you can filter by ethnicity in Grin. Crazy.
Yeah. Isn't that wild? I love that you can target your target audience, not just the right influencer that you're looking for.
Exactly.
Well, you can also test anyone with any kind of interest. Like if I'm going to put an interest, I'm going to just say food. 300,000 people are going to pop up, you know, and then I'm going to narrow it down to, okay, New York. Now there's 10,000. Now I'm going to say women. Yeah. Then it's just like, it keeps narrowing down. So my sweet spot is if I find filtering to get at least under 100, then I'm like, okay, let me look through these.
this is worth the time. Cause if not, then it's a needle in a haystack. I wouldn't want to go through that list either.
Yeah, heard that.
Do your campaigns or activations, since you use activations in Grin, include multiple tasks, typically more than one post or story, for example?
Sometimes, yeah. We'll send it to them. And if an influencer is like, hey, like I usually ask for payment. I'll be like, hey, like it's no problem. It's just optional. Because at the end of the day, it is optional. We're not requiring you to do something, especially because you're doing it for free. It's always optional and we always negotiate with them. We'll be, I actually had an instance this morning where she's like, hey, like I usually ask for pricing, but like I love your pieces and I really want them. And I'm like, hey, like no problem. I'll more than happy to give you more pieces if you're able to like give us a simple IG story. She was like, I'll give you an IG story and a feed post if I can get more pieces. I was like, done deal.
Just give me the products. Okay, so this one is another contract question, but it is slightly different because it's asking, do you send contracts when you're going to be running an ad, or do you just use the Grin terms and conditions? So this is a definite like Grinner. Meaning
the Grinner.
Someone who uses and leverages Grin. Like, do you use the terms and conditions that are built into activations? Because I know you had mentioned that you just ask for it, but is there a more formal process?
Yeah, we've added, so Grin gives you specific rights that populate, and you're able to opt into that, or you can create your own. We created our own. So they're opting when an influencer is opting in and submitting a proposal. They're literally signing off to every single kind of usage we would want.
Nice. I like that. This one's a good advice one. Should we be posting influencer content on our Instagram? I've heard from random content creators of social media scheduling tools that brands shouldn't, but I thought that that was the whole point, exclamation point.
Wait, can you say it again?
Yeah. Should we be posting influencer content on our Instagram? I've heard from random content creators of social media scheduling tools that brands shouldn't, but I thought that that was the whole point.
You absolutely should be using, like, repurposing your influencer content.
100%.
Also, I am, this is just my perspective and this is my opinion, so I don't want this to be like, well, Ashley said, I hate using like scheduling tools.
100%. That's a good note.
100%.
Yeah. I post depending on how I feel the traffic is and how engagement is. And also, if I'm posting something, I'm literally watching it the moment I post and seeing how it does and if how comments are going, how engagement, the awareness and everything on it. Like, I want to see it in action. I don't want it to just like subconsciously not be on my head. Like, I don't want it to be scheduled and then I completely forget about it and then I forgot that I posted it. I want to like actively know, okay, I posted it. Now I'm going to watch it. And it's sometimes like when it hits, it's really exciting. When it doesn't hit, it's like, okay, let's note this. What day is it? What time is it? Why is this different from other days that have worked? And you strategize based on that.
Yeah, you have to know what's working. You have to be able to have insight. I always toggle between back and forth of like scheduling tools and not scheduling tools. Cause I think that regardless, you can only schedule so much. There's like the set it and forget it. I think for a brand's perspective of like, hey, I know if these are the posts that I know, then I don't want to have to, I don't know, burn my calories using that, but I do want to burn my calories on these specific posts that I'm really either testing out or I want to see how they perform.
Yeah. And it also depends on like for us specifically, like what's trending. I'm not going to schedule things that are irrelevant to what's going on in society like right now. Like, let's just say Tyler mentioned a good point, like something that an interest that came to us is sneakers. If I posted things with just products, but there's like a really trending sneaker and we have a photo of that sneaker with product, like I want to make sure that that's being posted and I want to make sure it's current. Or just, you know, any other kind of interest that we have, because we have so much content that is either from influencers or just from photo shoots, that I want to make sure that it's everything is timed correctly.
Yeah, that makes sense. I promise we're almost to the end. We're at the bottom few of the questions. How is the consumer funnel different on TikTok compared to other social media channels?
How is that different? The long and short.
Is it different?
I was going to say the long and short answer is it's not. Like, it's not different at all. So with each of these platforms, again, you run into different complications. Like tomorrow, for example, TikTok's Pixel is opening up to first party, third party, and dev tools, right? So that's a move. Mm-hmm. Something like that took Facebook 8 years to do. TikTok's did it in like a year. So the funnels are the same. How the funnels function are different, and it requires you to make sure that you're doing whatever you can with the data to support and fulfill as much as you possibly can. So again, that links into first party, all the ins and outs of that world, which is a whole separate topic. The answer is it shouldn't be different. Like, you should be treating your funnels the same. What you can do is if you're UTMing, like, you could take UTMs from TikTok and target them on Facebook, or target them on Google, like use your Google UTMs and target them on Facebook. So there's ways that platforms can play with each other, but it should all have a sort of top, never heard about my brand, middle, people showing engagement, people that have done stuff in the past, bottom, which is people visiting my website, viewing content, adding to cart, and even post purchasers. So people that have bought from us in the past, and time stacking that too. Like, you want to continue to stay top of mind, and that's across all these platforms, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, let's see. Let's see. Do you find us? Let's see. Just a note. TikTok whitelisting has been expanded to 365 days for paid ads. I feel like that's a note for you, Tyler.
Thank you. You know whoever wrote that? Whoever wrote that, thank you so much. I appreciate that. And I'll give her a go. You know, hit me up in the DMs. I want to thank
He's
you. I want to
send you a Starbucks
gift card.
Yeah. He's still going to fight me on it.
Yeah, I mean, that's dope, but I can't actually die one day.
And then the final question is, do you find that discount codes work well?
Everything is a
discount code. They work well for you.
Everything is a discount code for us at Trace. Yeah. So there's always a sale. There's always a discount code. I can say in ads, if I'm going to use something, regardless of whatever the content is, the ad text in bottom of funnel always has a discount code. Always.
Okay.
For the last 3 years.
Perfect. Yeah.
It's so funny because someone on our team said this, and it's so true, especially during pandemic. It was like literally the epiphany of a pandemic. It was like, what people do for an extra 5%.
It's true.
And it's so true.
So true.
Yeah. I definitely, if there's a discount, I want it.
Yeah.
Same. I am scouring it, and there's some, and I know that it's tough for a different brand. Well, there are different brand thoughts behind it, right? I think there are some brands feel like it cheapens their brand, but I also think that it depends on what they're selling and, you know, what that customer, the lifetime value of the customer, like, is that, are you selling one product? Or are you selling many products? Do you want like return people coming back? Because a lot of times, like if you have a lot of different products that people can pull from, like a discount to get them through the door is just an opportunity to like retarget them and tell them what else you have to offer them as a brand. And it just makes the most sense.
Look at Fashion Nova. Look at Fashion Nova though. They have consistent discount codes, and they're like one of the top brands right now. They have an incredible ambassador program. Their customers, whether they like the product or not, are continuously buying. It's like, it doesn't make them cheap. It makes them a great brand.
Yeah,
for sure. I always use the analogy of like the grocery store. Like, go to your local grocery store and see what benefits you get for signing up for a loyalty program. If it's exclusive discounts or fuel points, discounts on gas or whatever, like they're not looking at you as just that $100 purchase for groceries this week. They're looking at you as $400 per month. They're looking at you as $4,800 per year. So if that $50 in fuel points is enough to get you to be that $4,800 a year customer, then hell yeah, I'm going to give you $50. You know?
That is actually so, so
another
true
analogy from Mr. Tyler.
It's so true. That one really hit home because I literally had a conversation about like the airline I chose, because I'm in New Orleans today and I'm like, what airline did I choose? As my husband's driving me to the terminal, I was like, Southwest. And he's like, well, Southwest goes to New Orleans. I was like, yeah, that's a fun fact. It's all rapid rewards, baby. I'm trying to rack up the rapid rewards.
That's it.
But like, that's how I chose my flight.
Yo,
like it can definitely, and it's how you treat people too, as well too, like getting free drink coupon. Like there's this like sense of pride as well too. So I think it is just kind of the way that you look at it.
It attracts the eye. You're like, oh, you want a little discount? It's like,
CLTV, man. CLTV.
Even if it's like nothing.
That's the growth and scale metric.
It definitely is. Okay, so this is the best way to end it, because the best way is one comment for you guys. A very big fan of this brand. I have so many of their rings.
Aww.
And on that note, I want to thank you so much for letting me steal so much of your time, for having you guys drop all of that knowledge. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm still sending you my deck.
Okay, I hope so. I hope so.
No, it was super fun. Really, if anybody wants to reach out to, like, Doors Always Open on LinkedIn or social channels, like, feel free to pick my brain about marketing. I always like to make myself available for people that want to ask questions.
Perfect.
And I'm always in DM, so you can just DM Trust.
Slide into Ashley's DMs. Tyler will actually be speaking on stage at Commerce Next in New York with us. So lots of stuff ahead for you guys. Thank you again so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Between the fireside chat and this Q&A, all I have to say is wow. It's impossible to walk away from both of them without really rethinking or just thinking a lot more about how you're leveraging all of that UGC that you're getting. And that's from your customers and your influencers alike. I think that as a director of content, I would say that this is completely my jam. While there isn't a direct one-to-one between post and sale, how you leverage that content can drastically reduce the cost of creating that perfectly curated piece that may not actually convert as high as using or leveraging that UGC on a paid social channel. Now, I think it's because as consumers, what really makes a thumb scroll stopping ad is something that really comes across as authentic. Now, I'm not saying that we should be rid of all branded content, but just imagine a world where you didn't always have to search for a stock image or you didn't have to pay for a complete photo shoot. Do you want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. Be sure to give us a rating and leave us a review. If you're interested in watching the fireside chat with Tyler and Ashley called UGC 101, Maximizing Creator Content for Your Paid Ads, or other brand stories that we've featured from Able, Vera Bradley, Trifecta, Nutrible, and many more, just visit the live events section at grin.co. Check out our resources and blogs while you're there for more tips, tricks, and marketing trends. Until next time, keep grinning.